Now, in 2012, the five-year average suicide rate for 15 to 19-year-olds was four times higher in Northern Ireland than for England and Wales. In 2014, 550 under-16s and 5,500 16 to 19-year-olds were prescribed antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs. Those are shocking statistics, actually. The Northern Ireland Commissioner for Children and Young People, Cúil Yosuma, has launched an independent review of child and adolescent mental health services in Northern Ireland. You've got concerns, Cúil?
I do, Stephen, and that doesn't just come from those sorts of statistics. It also comes from talking to children, to young people, their parents. Yeah. But tellingly, all the professionals that work with them, particularly teachers and youth workers and social workers, who are saying they have never experienced such high levels of anxiety amongst our children, young people, including very, very tiny kids.
What's that about? What's going on?
I don't know what's happening. But what is interesting, I do think this, some of this is about diminishing resources. And what we're seeing in our community and voluntary sector is that they're dealing with higher levels of issues. I think some of it is to do with the conflict in Northern Ireland. I think some of it is to do that we're more willing to talk about it now, which is a really, really good thing.
But why would children be affected by the conflict in Northern Ireland, which is over?
Really? OK, that's an interesting supposition in view of the amount of work we're doing at the moment around punishment attacks on our so-called punishment attacks on our young people, which is actually child abuse. What we know that in Northern Ireland is that approximately 40% of children are living with an adult who has been deeply affected by Northern Ireland's conflict. Now, when you live in a house or in a community that is impacted by something and that community is still recovering, of course you're going to be touched on it as a child. That's going to affect you.
No, I get that. And that 40% figure is what?
It's come from the University of Ulster from 2015 on behalf of the Commissioner for Victims and Survivors, said 40% of all children living in Northern Ireland have been impacted, are living with an adult impacted on by the conflict. And let's not forget, that includes the children and families of service personnel, of ex-police officers, as well as in other communities. So it is huge, and we don't understand the issue, which is why I'm launching this review today. We need to understand what it is that what ails our children and young people, and how what their experiences are of accessing services, both in the community but also formally through the health service. We need to understand their journey. We need to understand where it works and where it doesn't work, and where the strengths are and where the weaknesses are, because we do not, in Northern Ireland today, have that information. We don't have that data.
I was shocked. The Talk Table Project, which is a programme to bring young people into news and current affairs at a main debating table. We've broadcast one programme so far. So for the research for that programme, I went around a number of youth groups. I was shocked when I was looking at the age ranges were from about 11 to 21.
Yeah.
And consistently they were talking to me about self-harming themselves, about a very real worry in their community about suicide among their peer group.
Absolutely.
And I present a radio show every day. I think I'm in touch with issues in Northern Ireland. And I was surprised by how deep that went with those young people. What is going on?
That's what we don't understand wholly what's going on, because, like I said, we don't have the data. But I am, which is why we're launching this review today, and it's going to be a long piece of work. It comes on the back of 2 years solid work where we've tried to unpick these issues and identify these issues. What's sad, Stephen, is that it's not appearing on the top of the agenda. You know, we've had two very close elections. Children's mental health hasn't appeared at the headline, nor has adult mental health, although there's been a lot of talk about mental health. And what I'm looking forward to for your next Top Table programme is that this issue is at the top, because it's either the first or the second biggest issue for all our children. And like I said, this isn't just the teenagers. I have primary school teachers telling me that P1s P1s and P2s are coming into school in a heightened state of anxiety. How can that
P1
be
P1 and
right?
P2?
P1s and P2s are coming into school.
Colin, no.
Stephen, yes. And I'm genuinely not making
it up.
That's
4 and 5 year olds.
I know what age it is, mate. I'm the Commissioner for Children. I know their ages. This is not something that is just about our teenagers. This is something that's a whole family and a whole community approach. And for too long, it's been dealt with and managed by the community. And because we don't know the statistics, we don't know the figures, we don't know what ails our children, the system isn't organising itself properly. Just...
I'm pausing to try to process what you've said there.
Okay.
The 4 to 5 year olds. How many did you tell us?
I'm just saying it's. I'm picking it up as I go around schools. So we're.
And do we know if it's higher than elsewhere in the UK?
What we don't know about the little ones. What we do know about children, and young people. So this is we don't know.
Yeah. What
we
you're
estimate.
Trying to establish.
This is what we're trying to establish. Or this is what we're calling on the government to establish. What we estimate. It's estimated across the water, across the UK, that 20%, 1 in 5 of children, young people have mental health issues. If you look at Northern Ireland, all the best estimates say that's 25% higher. The minimum is 25% higher. There have been surveys from bona fide organisations like Queen's and the NGO sector, you know, the charitable sector, which says it could be as high as 26, 27, even 30%, nearly 1 in 3 of our children. But we don't know. Right now, in England, Scotland and Wales, there is what's called a prevalence survey of children's mental health. There isn't one in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, our government, our Department of Health, opted out of that.
Why?
They said, no, thank you. Well, they're claiming, and I can understand, they're claiming it's a resource issue. What we're trying to find out at the moment...
Well, they didn't have enough money to do it.
They didn't have enough money to do the survey. My question is, you know the spend a penny, save a pound thing. My question is, how can they decide how they spend the 19.5 million, which isn't enough, on children's mental health, unless they know what it is that ails our children and our families? Until you know that, how can you spend it? Stephen, when somebody organises their garden, they look at the space, they decide how many plants to buy based on the information, and then they go to the shop. We're not doing that with our child and adolescent mental health system because we've got no robust information. Now, what we're trying to do today with the opening of this piece of work, which is an initial survey, is to try and understand the experiences of our young people and where the young people...
By asking them directly?
By asking them directly, initially through a survey, and then we'll be going out and talking directly. But where the young people themselves can't speak, we have a separate survey for parents and carers to get them to tell us what it was like when they sought help, whether that was from the community, whether that was through school, whether that was from the GP, or whether that was the Department of Health or any other system.
I'm behind the times.
Okay.
All right? I'm an old man now.
Not as old as me, but there you go.
Does every school in Northern Ireland have a mental health teacher, practitioner? Is it taught in schools? And I'm sorry I don't know that, but I
don't. There are varying levels of education. Every post-primary, every secondary school in Northern Ireland has an independent school counselling service. There had been some hope and some plans that would be introduced in primary schools. Obviously, the model would need to be different, but that never happened because of resources. So what we do have is every school in Northern Ireland has a pastoral care teacher, particularly post-primary, who works with young people. But what we're hearing from those teachers and from those services is they're inundated, including in some areas, the independent counselling service, they have huge levels of unmet need. They can't reach all the children that need to be reached. And then referral on is difficult. And what we don't understand is what that journey is for the young person when the school counsellor talks to a child and they think that this young person needs more than I can offer. There's something going on that needs a psychologist or psychiatric service or something else. That pathway then becomes more difficult. Now, Stephen, there is a health warning to what I'm saying to you. I do not want anyone listening to me today to think that our child and adolescent and our community support service is broken. It's not. Services are there and they're very, very willing to meet the needs of young people. So if you are concerned about a child or you are a child or young person who's not concerned, please contact the services. What I'm saying is they could do a lot better, but we need to know a lot more.
So beyond the collection of data, which has happened elsewhere and not here, mm-hmm. Are you able at this stage, or is this for the future, to compare what is available to children in Northern Ireland compared to the rest of the UK?
No. Not with any confidence. No, and
it'd be important to do that, wouldn't it? Benchmark it.
And absolutely, absolutely. So if we're saying the across the water, it's expected they spend about 10% of their mental health budget on children and young people's mental health. In Northern Ireland, we spend just under 8%. That leaves us just under £5 million short on the levels across the water. When bearing in mind what I said at the beginning, everybody with any expertise in this area says that our mental ill health of our young people would probably be 25% higher than across the water. Do you see where we're starting from? Even on the money, we are starting behind. Now, it's really difficult in this age of austerity when there isn't enough cash to have the Children's Commissioner coming on and say we need more cash. But I can't see. One, we need to make sure that we're spending the cash we have on the right services. So we need to hear from the people who are accessing those services. And I include in that community and voluntary sector services. But secondly, I'm not sure there is any way around this. We need more cash. But that's me predicting some of the outworkings of this. But I can't see any way around this.
Beyond the issue, which is a huge issue in itself, obviously, of the legacy implications of the Troubles and that 40% figure, which you gave a matter of moments ago, are there any other issues in Northern Ireland that are coming to the fore as to deteriorating children's mental health?
Yeah, I mean, we've got that issue. We have the issue I've already talked about a systemic and sustained underinvestment, which means that we're not healing, or children aren't recovering as quickly because there's a long time between their concern and them accessing help. The other big issue for us is poverty. Now, our poverty rates are up and down, but what we know about, so it's about one in four children in Northern Ireland live in some form of poverty, and we've had this discussion before. Now, whether people agree with that or not, there are one in four children in Northern Ireland today who are significantly financially worse off than their peers around them. And that means that we know that children and adults living in poorer, more deprived communities have higher levels of mental ill health, as well as physical ill health, have higher levels of mental ill health. One of the unique things about poverty in Northern Ireland is we have the same families and the same communities in poverty year on year on year. And that includes rural poverty. Please, you know, let's not forget that there are pockets in our rural areas of abject poverty. And we need to know better about those families. So our consistently higher and persistent levels of poverty also deeply impacts on our children's mental health.
What should a child do if they're listening to this programme?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good question. If a young person is listening to this programme and they're in school, or they feel comfortable with the adults around them, please speak to one of the adults around you. And please, although they should be at school right now, but if they're not because of exams and what have you.
On a podcast later.
God help us. I'm sure they've got better things to do. But I would genuinely, if they feel comfortable and confident talking to adults, I genuinely would suggest that they do that, because there are services out there. We haven't got no services. We've got some great services with really, really good professional expert people wanting to work. If you don't feel comfortable talking to an adult, ring organisations like Childline, ring organisations, other helpline organisations. Come to our website and you'll find information of how to access services. If anyone is concerned about a child's mental health or emotional wellbeing, please, please, please contact services. And if you don't know which ones, please ring our office.
What are you going to do with all this data?
Firstly, let me remind people where they go. So what I'm going to do, we are opening up the survey and then we're going to follow that up. So go to our website, which is nikki.org /speakyourmind. But if you just get to the homepage, you'll find the survey. Once we've got it, we're going to use that to feed it to our executive, because I know they'll be back soon, and to give them really strong recommendations that are based on the lived experiences of our children. And isn't the customer always right? How can anyone make any decision without knowing the impact of their decisions on the children and young people?
My experience, and look, it was just anecdotal.
Yeah.
You know, a few visits by me to different groups over a couple of months of a period. But my experience was, when you ask the young people they are willing to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I was, again, I was surprised. I thought, well, look, we're going to have to, you know, really spend a lot of time forcing this out of them. You say to them, what's a big issue in your community? Mental health, suicide rates. Yeah. And how openly they were talking about themselves.
Yeah. That's what my experience as commissioner of the last 2 years has been. They're really wanting to talk about it. And when they go to our survey, those of them who are able for survey, we're also taking telephones, but go to the survey, you'll find it's quite long. It's not complicated, but it's long. And that's because we're trying to get underneath that. You know, young people are saying, our experiences, you know, mental health is a big issue. We're trying to get into the detail. What has that journey been like? What sort of support? Where did you ask for support? How did you get it? Where did it work? So we need to get into that detail, Stephen, because saying mental health, saying suicide, saying the high levels of prescription drugs, saying the length of time, saying the waiting times is absolutely right. But what are the bits within the system that we need to change? Let's give detailed advice on that.
Then this Belfast Telegraph article today, the headline, Northern Ireland schools drug suspensions hit alarming levels. The Bell tells saying today around four pupils are being suspended by Northern Ireland schools every week on drug-related matters. Mm-hmm. The number of suspensions for drugs hit a peak in 2014-15, during which 256 pupils were disciplined. That's an average of more than six a week. You've got to be concerned by that.
Of course I'm concerned. I'm concerned about any child who is out of school. I'm absolutely concerned. But I respect that schools have to find a way forward. But I also would suggest that the two issues are not unconnected. We need to be able to support our schools to respond better to these issues. I'm assuming most of the children came back after a period of suspension and hopefully never indulged in this behaviour before. We need to be sure that children and people understand the impacts of having drugs and alcohol. And I do, again, commend services on the ground, but again would suggest that they're not reaching everywhere because of funding. But why are our children, and in certain circles, people talk about self-medication. We talked about prescription drugs at the beginning. You know, this is another way of medicating for young people, of taking drugs in order to take away whatever it might be going on in their lives.
Yeah. In 2016, Bangor Grammar School suspended 3 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
Year 11 children. I'm reading this from the Bell Tell this morning. They're children as young as 11.
Yeah.
My goodness.
It's scary. It's as a mother, not let alone as a commissioner, as a mother, it's very, very scary. And what I do know from what happened in Bangor is that they had a whole community approach, that the schools all got together and talked about the best way. But it is really scary that very young children are getting drugs. You would hope it a little bit is experimentation. When I say you would hope, I don't want any child to have a drug, but that it's a one-off and those boys have learnt their lesson. The best way to support our children is to make sure that they never, ever go anywhere near any sort of drugs or illegal substances, and also that they delay taking alcohol as long as possible.
Let me just get your reaction to what the Deputy Chief Constable, or is it Assistant Chief Constable now, whichever is titled, Drew Harris. Deputy Chief Constable from the PSNI. He was in the other day on the show and he revealed that at any one time there are 200 investigations in Northern Ireland, active investigations into online child sex abuse. At any one time, Cúla, there's a huge issue for Northern Ireland as well.
It absolutely is.
200 cases at any one time.
It is huge, and there is so much that we don't know about what's happening on the internet. What I would say is those 200 give me some assurances that there are over 200 children being protected. There are 200 perpetrators being investigated. Now, you know, there has been a lot of talk about, is this coming out into the open or is there more of it? And we don't really know that. But it's 200 too many. I absolutely agree. But I get assurances that the police are investigating this and they're investigating it properly. We need to protect our children. We need to be sure that adults, even if something in their gut is telling them something's not right, please pick up the phone and don't stop until somebody listens to you.
Here's Keeveen on the line. Good morning to you, Keeveen.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Keeveen.
Well, it was just picking in and then listening in there, and you've just been saying about how, see, I'm actually on the NICU Youth Panel, and one of my groups is mental health.
Okay. And you're 17, Kevin?
I'm 17, yes.
Okay.
And, well, especially speaking as a person who's gone through the mental health services, I feel that it's more the fact that our adults kind of still have the stigmatisation against mental health, that as a kid you were saying about how you were surprised at heart open, but a lot of people my age and people younger know and see the effects of ill mental health every single day. And I believe as well, picking up on an earlier point, that you were saying about you don't understand how the conflict can affect things, how can it affect my generation.
Yeah.
I was born after the Good Friday Agreement, but still to this day I feel the resonating effects of the conflict. That
in what way?
It has affected our government so much. In my lifetime, the government has broke up over a handful of times.
Yeah, but I guess the question is, how does that then affect your mental health or your generation's mental health?
I'm getting to that point now. That the fact that the government breaks up, that is causing instability in our entire country, which means if there's instability in the country, how can there be stability in our mental health services? So then that, of course, creates more instability in the child, that they aren't getting that help that they need. Plus also, if you have such a conflict in your country's past, and you still have the resonating effects in that we have riots around the St. Patrick's Day, around the 12th of July, you always then still feel the effects, which can create which creates problems within a child's mental health. Yes, I might not have lived through the conflict, but we still have to suffer the effects that the older generations cause. So it is my belief that the fact that it's maybe sometimes other generations, I'd say our government, that they're not putting enough effort and enough work into making sure our mental health services are good.
How powerful is the Youth Council?
What do you mean?
You said you're part of the Youth Council.
No, she's part of my...
part of your council.
She's part of our NICU Youth Panel.
How powerful is that panel? What happens in that panel?
Be nice now, Kevin.
What happens in that panel? Just tell the truth, Kevin. Never mind being nice to her.
No, well, one, I love Kula. She is an amazing commissioner and she does so much work for all of us. And I'm a part of that survey. I helped make the video on the survey and being all a part of that. And I took the survey as well myself when I was down at NICU one day. And I think the NICU panel is amazing. I was in comms service for over a year and a half, and I didn't even know that comms was a child and adolescent mental health service until I went to NICU. I just thought it was a children and young people centre.
And you needed help yourself, did you?
I am still attending comms, and I am a child of the mental health services. I go weekly, and I have to have my help. I'm one of the public people who's in the statistics of having to use medication and things like that.
And are you comfortable or not comfortable telling us why you needed that service?
I've had trouble in my past, suffered different forms of abuse, and now I am having to live with the kind of resonating effects of that as I've grown older, and it has made me have severe mental health issues. But I like that I can use NICU, and I do be able to use NICU, that I use it to speak out and say, no, like, we need to change these different things. And I think in the Youth Panel, I have been able to do that. I've been able to say, this is what's wrong. Like, we need to change these. And not even just with mental health, but with other things, is like, we have like the poverty group and the safeguarding group, and that's been able to help us make changes.
You know, Kula, just we're nearly out of time here. We've 2 minutes left. And, you know, I am determined not to be patronising to people of Kevin's age. But every time I hear these younger voices, it just genuinely resonates with me how articulate they are, how they've got so much to say, and how they've got so little space in Northern Ireland to say it.
Exactly. And that is one of my jobs. And Kevin's right. You know, our executive being in and out means that young people from panels like NICU and Youth Forum and all some of the other shadow youth councils haven't been able to engage directly. The other thing, and she said it, is that, as I said, that they're the experts. They're the ones who helped design all the materials for this campaign. They came up with the name Speak Your Mind. They came up with the logo Burning the Brain. They helped write the survey. So, like I said, it's long, but I hope it's not complicated, because young people like Keevin trialled it for us and they gave us advice on the language and what have you. And you heard what she said about calms. So why are we not listening to them? Why do we not have a youth assembly type process in Stormont? Why? I'm hoping that's one of the things they're talking about right now. How can we not? Because it's true, out of the mouths of babe. But who else would design a service without talking to the very people it's for?
Keevin, nice to talk to you. Kula, thanks very much for coming in. Thank you. See you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.